This is C3 COVID. So C3, remember, now stands for Comprehensive Core Curriculum.
We're really trying to link it to the Core Pentium textbook, like you're going to hear today. There'll be lots of references to the Core Pentium textbook. There's a brand new site on the website coming, and it is gorgeous, and it's going to make finding things a lot easier. We do plan on eventually doing like 50 of these and then continuously sort of revising them, right?
Yeah, that's right. So hopefully by the end, we'll have covered all of the major topics that you need to know as you're a new learner in emergency medicine.
Chapter 1, COVID.
So today we're going to focus on COVID. And as we are recording this, it is November of 2020. That's when the original audio is being recorded. But what we plan to do is to update it as needed. So over time, we'll make changes here and there because even though the information has slowed down a little bit, there is still lots and lots of new papers and everything coming out. We just didn't want to wait too long to get a core content review out there and available to people. Because not only is this a brand new disease to the entire world, but also a lot of our learners, medical students in particular, have been sheltered from any potential COVID patients. In fact, many of our interns, junior learners in general, have been sheltered from exposure to COVID patients. And so we have a whole generation of people who really are very much behind the curve on knowing how to manage these patients and really haven't gotten any exposure to them. So it's really, at this point, we feel like it's the right time to do a comprehensive review of the topic.
And that's true of nursing staff as well and nursing students. I just want to say before we get too much further as well that the way the Core Pentium chapters work is that we tell you how to look after the crashing patient. And then we sort of give you a quick overview. And then we do this section called the deep dive, which you're generally supposed to like read at home when you really want to go into a topic in detail. So we're going to do that here. So don't be surprised if it feels like we've already talked about a topic because we have. And we're going to say that that is a feature, not a problem. That's spaced repetition. So we'll give you a little bit of detail and then later in the audio, we'll go into more detail on a lot of those topics.
The Core Pentium chapter on COVID-19 is basically your written summary. We're going to be following that pretty closely and then also giving you our take on things and our opinion on things. Mel and I actually started that chapter back in March. We were the original authors of that chapter. Followed everything very, very intensively closely for a few months. And then fortunately, we're able to hand off authorship to Crystal Ives, Britt Guest, and we still have a number of people who assist with the specialized sections. For example, Almama 2 is following the cardiovascular section, a number of other brilliant people. And then we also have Stuart Swadron, who's doing the editorial review of the chapter before it gets republished. And it's still being republished with a lot of frequency.
This is a brand new disease. The world didn't know about this less than 12 months ago. And look how far we've come. There's still so much we don't know. But we have come a long way. So this will be our sort of state of the art as it is in November 2020.
I want to point out, like you said, Mel, because it is a brand new disease, there were a lot of things that we learned early on. And fortunately now, survival rates are pretty good. And we've learned so much about how to take good care of this type of patient because COVID is like nothing else. There's so much we didn't know early on. So we saw these really sick patients, really, really hypoxic and respiratory distress, and they were intubated really early, and that was thought to be the right thing to do. And then it wasn't until later that we found out that not only are there better ways to treat their hypoxia and respiratory distress, but in fact, intubating them early may make them much worse. So that was a hard lesson to learn, and I'd say fortunately it was learned very quickly, and now we're able to take better care of these patients. We also learned that while COVID is primarily a respiratory disease, it can affect pretty much every system in your entire body. And there are many extrapulmonary effects or sequelae of COVID that we're going to go through in detail, including, I'd say, the big one that was a big shock. I mean, what other virus causes strokes and heart attacks and PEs at this rate? So it's very, very unique illness. And we've learned so much so fast. We have so much more to learn.
Yeah, we can't overstate enough how much better we've gotten. The initial reports out of China and places that got hit really hard early in Italy, their mortality rates for the patients were enormous and it was terrifying. It's like this disease is 100 times worse than flu. And as we got better at it and we intubated less people and we learned how to ventilate patients better, the mortality has come down substantially. That's been a big, big change over the last even 6 months.
Approach to critical patient.
We're going to approach this topic from the A, B, C, D, E perspective. So I'm going to put A's and B's together here, airway and breathing, Mel. Now, we know that COVID is primarily a pulmonary illness, but it can affect every system in the body. Let's focus on the patient who is hypoxic and in respiratory distress. And this is, like we said, one of the things that's really unique and very odd about COVID is that you can see patients initially not even in severe respiratory distress who are saturating 50% or lower. And normally that's just very incongruent in our minds. Like, when have you ever seen that? Mel, have you literally ever seen someone with a pulse ox of 50 who's talking to you with mild symptoms?
Oh, I've seen plenty of people with pulse ox of 50, but they're in cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
I've never seen anybody being able to talk to you. Now, I haven't been working clinically during this time, but this is the thing that freaked everybody at the beginning. How can you possibly be sitting up and talking to me where the pulse ox is low? The pulse ox must be wrong. And then people start to get blood gases, and it's not wrong. It's a profound amount of hypoxia, but the patient's still awake. So have you seen that, Jess?
Yes. Usually these patients are in some degree of respiratory distress. I think it's just incongruent how much respiratory distress they're in. They could be in mild distress and have a pulse ox of 50, and that's what's so shocking about it. So we're going to focus here on the critical patient. So a patient who is in respiratory distress, normally we'd be reaching for the laryngoscope. But in this case, when possible, you don't have to always go straight to intubation. And in many cases, it's better not to. So we are going to be reaching for other things here. We're going to be looking for high flow nasal cannula or non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. Okay, so we'll talk in more detail about those options. But even someone with a surprising amount of distress and hypoxia can turn around. It's just amazing, like how much better they can look with a few minutes on high flow nasal cannula, the warm humidified high flow nasal cannula, if you have that available. So that's a great option. So hopefully we're not getting to the point of intubation. But if you are going to intubate the patient because they just are way too ill looking or worsening work of breathing or hypoxia, despite being on high flow oxygen or positive pressure ventilation, perhaps they're too altered, this would be someone who you'd want to think about intubating. Mel, let's walk through what are the things that you need to do as you prep yourself, your patient, and the room for intubating a COVID patient.
Well, I'd make it very simple. First of all, make sure that you are prepared. So normally you would run into a room with somebody who's really sick and just get busy. And we've been pretty lax, frankly, with our own PPE in other conditions. But this is a condition where we know that if you take the time that you put on all your PPE, your chance of getting infected is very, very low. So put on that N95, put on that PAPR or the CAPR if you've got it, put on the eye shield, put on the gown, put on the gloves, isolate the patient if you have a place to do that, and limit the number of people in the room. So the less people in there, the less people that are potentially going to get infected. And then you want to try and avoid as much as possible aerosolizing this virus. So don't bag if you don't need to, and then get that tube in quickly and put viral filters on everything.
Yeah, that's right. So this room feels a lot different than a typical intubation that you may be used to, or if you're a new learner, you wouldn't even necessarily know that for point of comparison, but there's fewer people in the room overall. Everyone is wearing masks or PAPRs, which is the powered air purifying respirator. Let me tell you, it's loud in there. It is hard to hear. It's even just with people with N95 masks on, it's hard to understand people. You lose the ability to sort of get the lip reading and their voice can sound a little bit muffled. Communication is a big challenge. And sometimes they roll in those machines to, like the HEPA filter machines, to filter the air in the room. This is a very loud room, and that intensifies the stress, just not being able to feel like you can communicate clearly with your team. Then you're working with the skeleton team because you want to reduce exposures to people in the room. So we don't have, you know, sometimes with these sick resuscitations, you got 10 people in the room. You should not have that here. You're down to just the one or two nurses that you need, perhaps a respiratory therapist, and the clinician, and that's it. So it's skeleton team here. If you can identify roles for people in the room ahead of time before the patient comes in, I find that to be really helpful. If you can try to make sure you know everyone's name of who's in the room, that's really helpful in trying to improve communication. And then other things that are different here. You know, there's some potential benefit to trying video laryngoscopy over direct. There's this potential benefit that it puts a little bit more space between you and the patient. You know, sometimes with DL, we stick our faces right up in there. You know, you want your eye as close to their vocal cords as possible. So if VL gives you a little bit more space, then that's a good thing. But I think, to be honest, just do what you're most comfortable with, because you don't want to be mucking around for a long time. So if you're quick with DL and that's what you're comfortable with, then just go get the job done.
Yeah, this is sort of like the really sick asthmatic patient. This is the, you generally want the fastest, best intubator. This is not a time to learn because there's significant risk to the healthcare workers. Having said that, let me say this. The other thing we learned about this is that if you do all of this right, you put all on your equipment, and most importantly, as you come out of the room, you take it off correctly, the chance of getting infected as a healthcare worker is really low, but you do have to be anal retentive. A lot of people that got infected, a lot of docs and nurses, it occurred early in the disease, but now we're seeing people are working for weeks and months in really in areas that are full of COVID, and the serologies are showing that the healthcare workers are not getting infected because they know how to do this now.
Some other things that we do to try to reduce our own exposure, you know, N95 masks are still a little bit tight. It's not like you can go through 10 of them in a shift. We're generally basically using one per shift. So how do you keep the outside of your mask clean? Well, you can put a surgical mask over the outside of it, and then you can wear a face shield over the outside of that. So I'm kind of layering up. You know, I've got more of a closer to airtight protection over my eyes with a face shield. I'm layering, and I feel like then you can get rid of the outside layers and preserve your more internal PPE. And I want to mention two other things that are a little bit different about this intubation compared to a more typical intubation. Number one is you're going to actually avoid bagging the patient if possible. Normally, that's a very standard practice. You know, you push your RSI medications, you bag the patient a little bit to ventilate them before you intubate them. We're trying to not do aerosolizing procedures when possible. Now, intubation itself is the most high risk in terms of aerosolizing, but bagging is another thing that could potentially spread more virus around the room. So we're limiting the bagging to only when you really need it. And in many cases, you don't have to if they're adequately pre-oxygenated to the best that you can. And then the other thing is only use the suction if you really have to use suction because your face is right there. And that's another thing that can aerosolize more viral particles. So if you need suction, great, it's there. But if you don't need it, then let's just not just go in as a matter of routine and suction all of the spit in their mouth all over the room.
That's gross.
And if you're troubleshooting the airway, or perhaps if you're running a code in a patient who might have COVID, one thing that's worked well for us is to place a supraglottic airway with a viral filter and bag through that.
All right, Jess, so you put all the equipment on, you did it really fast, you got the tube in. Now, how do we ventilate these patients? What sort of protocol do you use?
Well, let's keep it fairly simple here. We want to use a lung protective strategy. You can follow ARDSnet, and you can go into the Corpendium chapter to get more details on that. We'll dive a little bit deeper on that later on in this audio review. Mel, we've done A and B. Talk to me about C.
Yeah, so these patients, you know, can be basically septic. So they can have multi-organ failure. They can be hypotensive. They can have strokes. They can have MIs. So you're going to do the usual things you do for circulation. You're going to make sure you fill up the tank. And then if the tank is full and that's still looking bad, you might have to use some presses.
Yeah, much shorter section there for circulation. Also with D and E, disability. So just remember, COVID patients can also present with neurologic findings. They can have strokes, including large vessel occlusions. They could be altered or have encephalitis. And also remember, D, disability. Sometimes the D also stands for dextrose. You should still check a glucose on these patients. Anyone who's very, very ill can be hypoglycemic. And then finally, exposure. And I think of this, we've already kind of covered the PPE, which should be on every provider, and a mask on the patient when possible. Limiting aerosolizing procedures and limiting the personnel in the room if you're going to be doing them. You should really be doing them in a room and ideally in an isolation room.
Now, you can do your team a favor by going to the textbook chapter and clicking on the links about how to don and doff, to put on and to take off protective equipment. And there's video links there from, I think it's the CDC and other places. So learn that well so that when you go in there, you'll be they'll be able to teach you how to do it fast.